Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to remind you all that season two of my HBO show, Game Theory, debuts tonight, Friday, January 20th at 11 p.m. Eastern. It is also streaming on HBO and HBO Max. Come hear my ideas, supported by a full writer's room and a studio audience. It's dope. Can you tell I wrote this myself? It's dope. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Spencer Hall, what's going on?
I am not Dominique Foxworth. In so many ways.
Like, I imagine that people read the descriptions before they actually start listening, but I do wonder who the person is. That's like, like when I was working in North Carolina on radio, there's a dude, well, I guess he's familiar with Mark Packer. Mark Packer was, I don't know if he still goes by the Pac-Man, but he was Pac-Man. And he had a show called Prime Time with Pac-Man that he syndicated all across North Carolina. And it did big work in some of the smaller towns, right? Like, it was very popular there. But Pac-Man would take time off. The station I worked at syndicated it, and they put somebody else on for whatever reason. And one week, I think they were playing a replay of the Two Live Stews.
Oh,
when
boy.
The people were, where the hell is Pac-Man? This is the opposite of that.
That's not just the opposite of that. That is way down the row. That's not just categorically the opposite. That is opposite on so many different levels. So for those of you expecting a handsome, super compelling Harvard MBA who could run a 4.3 at one point, I'm none of those. Absolutely none of them. But we're gonna make it work anyway.
Man, let me tell you something about that 4.3 at one point. And I'm sure we'll get to talk football, mid-FL, we'll get a little college in here. And we're going to talk about Game Theory. Season 2 premieres January 20th, 11 p.m., immediately following Real Time with Bill Maher. I don't know why I said that so fast. The bosses say it's okay for me to plug it. But, you know, you still get a little bit nervous doing that kind of stuff on company time. But I was in a basketball gym for the first time in God knows how long a couple of weeks ago. Now, I am 6'4 in the media guide. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Probably right there around the 6'3s in real life. But I could dunk a basketball before I hit 6 feet tall, right? It is not as much a function of athleticism as it is spindliness and big hands, but I could do it. Okay. Man, I was in this gym and I was just standing under a goal and I looked at the rim. And have they made the rims higher than they used to? Because I looked at that and it was like, I would kill myself trying to dunk a basketball. Like, I'm so glad that I don't have that thing in me where I got to try to prove it, because there would be no Game Theory season two. There wouldn't be no Right Time. There would be nothing. And in fact, I don't even know what my health insurance situation is right now. That could have been all. But can you imagine if you messed around as a grown man and injured yourself only to find out that your insurance had lapsed?
So about that. So I'm irresponsible. And I had this moment. You had the moment where you looked up and you went, that is no longer just a hop, skip, and a jump. There's a moment when you have that as an adult, okay? Sometimes it's after capital T, capital I, the incident, which is usually the one story of epic drunken injury where somebody realizes that they are much closer to 50 than they are to 20. For me, that moment was, I went up on the roof to fix some stuff at a house, and this is how you know I'm from Tennessee. I was just like, I'll just go up on the roof. It's fine. It's just a thing normal people do. I'll go up on the roof. So I went up on the roof and I got the thing down. I was trying to get down. I think it was like a ball or a frisbee or something. And I thought, well, how am I going to get down? Having not thought this through, I was like, well, you know, I'll just scoot down. I'll just make it work, right? Just hang off the edge and drop. And I got to the edge. Oh, it was much further than I had remembered, anticipated, or were willing to really consider doing at that point. Okay. And I made a safe landing, but I could feel that my body was like, we are several millimeters in either direction from making a very unsafe landing. And at the time I was like, at least I'm insured. Nope. It had lapsed. It had totally lapsed. I just jumped off the roof of a house with no insurance whatsoever. So I feel you.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, man, I know the people know you primarily for your college football stuff. And this really actually comes in very handy now in talking to the NFL, because I've been talking about Brock Purdy for a couple of episodes here. But honestly, only people who really watch college football had ever heard of that man before he got here. Three-time All-Conference player, for what it's worth. Two-time All-Big 12 player, for what it's worth. And he seems like he is not simply along for the ride, but he also ain't driving the bus. You know what I mean? Like, he's giving directions. He's pointing things out. He's helping make things happen. Dude, I do not want to be Dak Prescott if he is on the losing side of the Brock Purdy game.
No. I think he has a built-in excuse, which is if that happens, people will just say, oh, it's 49ers are due and Shanahan's a genius, right? This would be much worse if Brock Purdy were lighting people up and his head coach was, I don't know, Brandon Staley. It'd be much worse if his head coach was somebody who was not regarded as a genius. I feel like genius can kind of bridge the gap between what I don't know about a player, which most people don't know about Purdy. I'll go ahead and I think he deserves his due, because at Iowa State, you have to understand, that is a reckless young man. That is somebody who would make two or three of the greatest throws you have ever seen. Stunners. He had two or three of those in a game. And then he had three or four throws a game where he was like, I don't have any help. I have to put it all on black at this roulette table and I have to let it ride. He had an ability to push the envelope because I felt like he didn't have a whole lot of help at Iowa State. That's no slack on Iowa State. You're just what you are, right? Like, they were a good football team for Iowa State, but at times Brock Purdy had to press. The nice thing is that he doesn't have to do that. On the 49ers, he has Kyle Shanahan, who can give you this beautiful, genius paint-by-numbers thing where he's like, go here, get rid of it. There, we have a Debo. We have a CMC. We have a Christian McCaffrey, okay? We have Mr. Fake Out the Entire Panthers linebacker core in practice. I don't know if you've ever seen that legendary story about him burning everyone in a preseason practice. You have those guys. Go ahead. You have tools that you didn't have at Iowa State. And Foxworthy on Debatable made a really good point where he said that, you know, he hasn't seen Purdy have to go off script. At one point, you're going to reach this sort of like, you know, everybody, all things being equal, everybody's good. Somebody's going to have to make a difference. Dak can definitely do that. We've seen him do that. We've also seen Dak try to do that when he didn't have to and make mistakes. That's one thing you can do when you're real talented. That's why Trevor Lawrence threw four picks. When you're really, really good, sometimes you're performing at the edge of your potential. And the edge of your potential, when it tips a little bit too far, that's a pick. Purdy hasn't had to do that. I think people are Garoppolo-ing him, and I don't think that's fair. Can we make that a verb? Like, we've Garoppolo'd him a little bit, and that we're like, oh, he's just the kind of creatus, this puppet that Shanahan's putting out there. I don't know if that's true.
Well, my thing is, if you've watched them play, you have the option of using your own eyes.
Yeah.
And people get real results-oriented about quarterbacks when they want to. Like, it's almost like we have an obligation that if the team is winning and they have a quarterback, then we have to give that quarterback some measure of the credit. And all you had to do was watch Jimmy Garoppolo, and it was clear what was going on. When they did that whole second half of that playoff game and he did not throw a pass, and the argument was being made, well, that's because they didn't have to. Let me explain something to you about offensive coordinators, son. They throw the ball for fun. They do not throw the ball out of a sense of obligation. They don't throw the ball to keep people honest. They throw the ball because that's what gets their rocks off, right? There are a few guys that like to cook up the run game, like Greg Roman has this incredibly sophisticated run game of note, an offensive line coach, right? Like, he's doing what his guys like to do. They like to get out there and go find ways to get big guys on small guys and destroy them and make their noses bleed. You know what I mean? Like, that's the game they play. Ain't nobody running no passes the whole second half because they don't have to pass. He didn't start running out the clock at the beginning of the third quarter. He knew his quarterback stunk. He was very aware that his quarterback stunk. He don't seem to be acting like this quarterback stinks.
No, and he has my favorite thing, which is right now he's a blessed kind of clueless. The blessed kind of clueless where you go, I didn't expect to be here. I didn't expect to go this far. I didn't expect to be starting. I didn't expect to be in the playoffs. So you know what he's experiencing? Everything's new. It's all new. There's no expectations whatsoever. If he bombs out, cool, good. All right, I got farther than I thought I was going to get. I got to show my stuff. If I win another game, cool. Let's see what happens. Like, I really think we also I think we overestimate the thought process that goes into players in general. You know, they're going to work. Guess what? If we win again, I get to show up to work next week. If not, cool. I'm going to Cabo. That's pretty much the combination of factors there. And one reason these guys are so good at their job is that they remember the patterns, but they forget the experience. I remembered what happened on the play before. That's why I'm in the pros, so I'll recognize the pattern if I see it again. But that emotional experience, either I've learned to process that through a process of expensive sports psychology sessions, or I'm the kind of Brett Favre type who has no long-term memory. None. Short-term. If it happened 3 minutes ago, I've completely forgotten about it.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So every quarterback that's left in the playoffs, just about, like, I may, as we go through it, I think Trevor Lawrence is the only one that may not fit this, but just about every quarterback in the playoffs has a question that you could ask based upon what we thought about them when they were in college, right? Mm-hmm. So Daniel Jones, for example, I guess it only took 5 years or whatever, but like, here we are, like, this is looking like a thing. But how the hell did people not realize he was fast in college, too? Like, I looked it up. He had a year at Duke where he ran for 500 yards, which is not like running the wishbone, but it kind of is, right?
Yeah.
And NFL defensive coordinators still have not come to realize, hey, you know the white dude can run, right?
I'm sorry. Can we wind it back here? The white dude from Duke. I'm just going to lay another. I'm just going to put a little mayo on top of that mayo.
From Charlotte Latin High School.
Correct.
A walk-on, as I recall.
Correct. Right. And by the way, it should take 5 years. It should take 5 years to be good at quarterback. I'm going to go ahead and own up to this. It's not like we throw a surgeon out there, right? Which is pretty much like the apex that where like physical dexterity and mental acuity and study meet, right? Surgeon. We don't tell somebody he's a bust as a surgeon after year two. We don't let them open up people's brains after year two. Like,
I don't think you get to year two, actually.
Yeah. You don't get to year two, right? This is one of the most difficult jobs in sports. It should take like 4 or 5 years for you to get out there, right? So when people are like, oh, finally, Danny Dimes is out there. One, it's funny you call him Danny Dimes because he's made his living with his legs. And two, oh, look, you match talent with a good like management with Daboll, right?
Yeah.
Who, if you look at that, by the way, Daboll's resume has gotten cool. Like, in a, like Josh Allen, who if you watch the Bills last year and you watch them this year, they are missing something that Daboll had in terms of managing that offense. And Jalen Hurts at Alabama. Like, these are two dudes who both of them benefited from his ability to say, I will work with what you do.
But hold on, though. That is where it gets interesting, because as I get back to how the hell did Jalen Hurts turn into this NFL quarterback when I saw him hold back two college teams? But it led me to the next one, which was Brian Daboll, Alabama fans did not have a positive impression of him after his time with Jalen Hurts. And it's like, I've seen you do this with Josh Allen, the most amazing fixer-upper case in the history of the NFL. I'm watching you do this with Daniel Jones against college kids. Couldn't get it done with Jalen Hurts, and Jalen Hurts couldn't get it done with you. And now you guys are meeting in the NFL playoffs. How?
Yeah. Yeah. A dude, by the way, like, we should say, by the way, an Alabama fan's unhappiness with something is not a national emergency nor an indicator of anything serious. If they lose one game, they're deeply unhappy with the performance of their quarterback. This, to me, is a generational change, because I watched Alabama growing up with quarterbacks like, I don't know, Jay Barker, where they were like, that's a quarterback. What was his line? 3 for 17, 44 yards rushing, no touchdowns, one interception.
Winner. And all you did was win the national championship.
All you did was win the nat. That's a winner right there. All of a sudden, they became aristocrats, aesthetes. They got taste and expectations for their quarterbacks now. That will never stop being funny.
Blake Sims changed him up. But that was me. Brian Dable had to bench Jalen Hurts at halftime of the national championship game.
Mm-hmm.
That happened. And now they're both here. And look, somebody had to play the Vikings. So I just don't know how much credit I'm supposed to give the Giants. And if the Vikings had won, I would have said somebody had to play the Giants. I understand why some of you may find that to be unfair, but I don't really apologize for the fact that that's how it turned out. But now Jalen Hurts is out there with a bum shoulder. It could turn it into the Giants in the NFC Championship game. And buddy, Daniel Jones, you don't have, you can put that gun away. You can put that mask away. You were going to have to steal your money from the Giants. And now they're going to gladly back the truck up for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then this is the best part is you get to do that when Saquon Barkley manages to turn a 4-yard run into a 45-yard run.
Yes.
My favorite position as a quarterback, right? I think I deserve the contract because Saquon got a touchdown. That is, the most beautiful thing about quarterback economics. I would love to be an agent doing that.
So they don't make enough Saquon Barkleys anymore. Like actually entertaining running backs. Like there are very good ones. And like Christian McCaffrey somehow, because they taught him to be these one cut guys, he should be way more fun than he is. Like I was watching one of those 90-second cut-ups of Barry Sanders. And yes, I know Barry Sanders is the extreme case in this situation. But man, it's just so much fun. It's inefficient. Somebody can make the argument to do all these things. But Barry Sanders was so much fun. We ain't got no fun running back. Alvin Kamara got the nose ring through the cartilage and it hang down and he played with it with a quality control charm around his chain, but it's still not fun. And it's not because he's not incredible.
No. And it's a position, too, where we've been coached to be efficient and balanced, and you don't get enough. Like there's one running back who I think qualifies as a certain type of fun. I will admit it is a certain taste acquired with him.
Is that Derrick Henry battering people?
You have to be kind of a sadist to enjoy watching Derrick Henry, because the first couple carries, they're not going to be much. But if you're the kind of person who likes a slow-starting movie, if you like one where you go, it's a pot boiler, you get to that third act, things start cooking. That, to me, is the best part about Derrick Henry, particularly when he shows you that he is a brilliantly fast running back, right? Like, there are still plays, right? Not as many as there used to be, but there are still plays where Derrick Henry turns on the jets and you go, something that big shouldn't move that fast, right? That's Derrick Henry. Now, there is some fun there. But on the whole, running backs don't get enough carries in order to do that. You know, Barry was not like a 40, 30 carries guy. But in 22 carries, he would at least have the time and space to make up for the -1, -2 yard runs by pulling off some dazzling 30 yarder. And you don't get that a whole lot. Like, I was trying to think of anyone else. You know, is Travis Etienne like at times that? Yeah, but it's not close. Saquon is as close as we get to that. It's mostly quarterbacks now. The only guy who compares in terms of I don't know where he's going to show up or what he's going to do is Debo Samuel, who's just at this point like a Swiss Army knife for Shanahan. Just an unfair advantage he can put anywhere all over the field. I absolutely adore that dude for two reasons. One, he's really fun to watch. And two, he was completely misused in college. And
yes.
Then hit the pros and they were like, oh, y'all messed up.
Don't you want to tell him who his college head coach was, don't you?
I think that was Will Muschamp.
Was it
Will Muschamp?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just mentioning that like I mean, I'm sure he had other things to do.
Yes. But Derrick Henry leads me to another one of our interesting how the questions, because I think Derrick Henry ran for, and I looked this up, a gajillion yards in high school in the state of Florida. And was not a 5-star recruit, because the thought was, I mean, he couldn't, he did that in high school. He can't do it like goes to Alabama. And then he does do it like that at Alabama. And we see that, and he gets the NFL, and he's something like a 3rd-round pick, because he can't do it like that in the NFL, can he? And then he went, and he did it like that in the NFL. And we were talking about this with Marcus Spears the other day. Patrick Mahomes, I think, is in a very similar place, a man who threw for like 750 yards once in a game in college. And the only explanation I have for how it is that he wound up slipping to 10 is just a bunch of people at every level being like, well, they can't do it like that at the next place. And now he's the best quarterback ever.
Yeah, sometimes you have to understand that PlayStation Madden players are right. You can just keep hitting the A button. That's all Lane Kiffin did with Derrick Henry. It's beautiful.
That's his offensive approach, by the way, is pressing the A button.
He is. Like I think that a gamer would put it this way, that he would just spam Derrick Henry. That's it. Spam Derrick Henry. Just keep giving the ball to Yuli, Florida's finest. And in Alabama, and this is like my favorite thing, when he finally got the sole starting job and Lane Kiffin was like, I have a rock. I'm going to keep hitting you with it. He had 2,200 yards.
Yeah. And then at the end of the year was getting like 40.
Yeah.
40 carries.
Like it was 1978. Yes. Yeah. And he just kept hitting it. And we were like, no. He couldn't possibly do that again. Au contraire. That is one of one. That is one of one. And if you look at him, the wildest thing to me is that he is that big and that strong. If you look at his legs, they're from a different model. They are from a sprinter's model. They are not from the kind of like heavy duty Christian Okoye size back that you think he should be. And I think that's like that might be some weird secret to his longevity, is that his legs are very efficient, but he has the skinniest legs on the biggest dude's body I've ever seen.
Now, like Lane Kiffin at various points in his career has tried to get too cute, right? Mm-hmm. However, fundamentally, Lane Kiffin operates like this. I forget who told me this. It may have been Felder told me this many years ago, that the Lane Kiffin approach, especially when he was like USC and Alabama, who's going to win the Heisman this year? Oh, you're going to win the Heisman this year? Okay, we're going to go get you the Heisman. So one year that was Amari Cooper, and they just threw the ball to Amari Cooper over and over again. At USC, it was Marquise Lee that one year, and they just threw the ball to him over and over again. But Lane saw a running back and was like, oh, well, guess we'll just give him 40 totes.
Why not? It worked. It worked. You should do the thing that worked. This was my point about Ohio State all season long. You should just throw the ball to Marvin Harrison Jr. as many times as humanly possible. Why isn't he catching the ball 15 times a game?
Well, if he can't, throw it to the guy that had 300 yards receiving in the Rose Bowl last year, whose hyphenated name I cannot remember.
Jackson Smith and Jigba.
Yes, because Ohio State got so many receivers that you're the other guy, buddy.
Yeah, be the other guy. That's it. You just play AB all season long. And that's what they should have done. They couldn't do that with Smith and Jigba, but he was in and out of the season. But do the thing that works. I know that there are coaches who are obsessed with balance. That's cool. I get that philosophically. It makes things very difficult for a defense if they have to consider all five options. If I got two options that are going to break you in half, guess what you're getting? Two options. That's what I'm going to give you. Like Patrick Mahomes, you know, Kingsbury in college just kept calling his number and let him go, both because, yes, he hated calling run plays. That's just not something that Cliff Kingsbury is very fond of. And it seems to be one of the reasons he's in Thailand right now, allegedly. But on the same time, if your guy can throw for 700 yards, let him. Do it. You'll probably win. You may almost beat Joe Mixon and Baker Mayfield, which is what Patrick Mahomes, in a game where he had over 800 yards. He was their leading rusher, too.
Oh, I didn't realize it was 800.
Oh, no. Total. Because I think he picked up like 70 on the ground and had something like 730. So, I mean, he finished with over 800 yards of offense in that game against Oklahoma. So if you can do that, go ahead and do that. Football doesn't have to be that hard.
I add to the next how the case is, the super interesting game in the AFC, Cincinnati and Buffalo. And I don't want to trivialize things, but, you know, the last time these two teams met, something happened. Like, this is going to be a kind of surreal football game to watch. But, and I know we've talked about this now for years, but I don't think we ever really got to an answer, which is, how did nobody ever try to coach Josh Allen before he got to the NFL? Like, I don't take back anything I said about him before. I really, really don't. I just can't understand how, like, he got that far with nobody being like, hey, let me help you out with that right there.
So I think it is the result of something that might, in his case only, be a myth, which is that you can't teach accuracy. That accuracy really can't be improved that much. Either you got it or you don't. Clearly, he's proved that that's wrong, at least in one case. But by and large, I think it has a lot to do with the college level in his case, if you're going to take somebody developmentally, you say, okay, I need to develop them in a year or two. I don't have a whole lot of time to cook because I got about 3 years to prove whatever I'm going to prove at this program before I'm fired. That's really right. Before they sort of say, is it working or isn't? And I think that's kind of affected quarterback development a little bit. You get guys like Ryan Day's system. You'll hear people say that, yeah, that's not a pro system. And I think the reason what they're trying to say is this. It is very plug and play. It is very quarterback friendly, but it is also very much a go here, right? Don't really worry about what's happening. Mark Richt used to get really good production out of his quarterbacks by saying, okay, well, think of it. We're just going to throw to open grass. That's it. We're just going to throw to open grass. It's not really a, all right, I need you to understand this is cover three and the, you know, the safety's got to buzz to the flat. And if he buzzes to the flat, you go here. The only guy who really had that kind of development, and I think you can see it in his quarterbacks that I can cite as somebody who I know had the four-year plan for his quarterbacks and expected to get all four of those years, is Chris Peterson. And you'll notice Chris Peterson retired because it's very hard to keep somebody for all 4 years and institute the year one, you learn this, year two, you learn that, year three, you're here, year four, you're a mind genius who can do anything you want on the field. Like the last quarterback I can kind of remember doing that over a four-year span, that's Kellen Moore. Like Kellen Moore, who was calling his own plays, by the way. By the time they got out there in year four, if you watch that game against Georgia that Boise State played, Kellen Moore's just looking at the defense and going, oh, that guy's dead. Let's go get him.
Well, apparently Joe Burrow got there, right?
In a year.
I talked about this in the last podcast, the how did Joe Burrow not beat out Dwayne Haskins? And then you go back and look at teenage Dwayne Haskins, and you're like, oh, yeah, nobody's beating that guy
now.
Totally.
Well, and this is a point about how curious and weird quarterback development can be. You know, if you had to compare it to anything, you'd probably compare it to your dude who peaked in middle school. I don't know if you remember the baddest dude in your middle school. Okay. Baddest dude in your middle school was not the baddest dude in high school, was not the baddest dude in your high school, not the baddest dude in college. This goes for anybody who was a student. You can be like, hey, man, I remember my valedictorian. My valedictorian dropped out of college sophomore year. Like that's, people peak at different times. And I, with Haskins, you can see RIP, may he rest in peace. With Haskins, you can see that his success in college, I think, sort of may have dented his development because he never really got his footwork right. You know, he had weird footwork and it worked in college. Oh my God, it worked in college. You know, he was fantastic, but he didn't work on that kind of technique stuff. With Burrow, I would really love to go and study exactly what made that work, because he wasn't that accurate either. And then once he got a fantastic slate of receivers and he got a year in that offense, gas, straight gas. He got more accurate. He got better at anticipating where people were, and he understood defenses so much better.
Yo, ego. I keep saying a big thing, reason this Brock Purdy thing is working is he has enough self-confidence that not everybody can throw these butt naked open dudes, but he has no question about whether he can throw to a dude that's butt naked open, right? Not everybody actually believes that. Joe Burrow's comment, I loved that. How long is the championship window open to Cincinnati? And I'm like, you knew what the answer was going to be when you asked that. And the answer for Joe Burrow was, as long as I'm here.
Yeah.
And he didn't sound like a jerk.
No, not one bit. And still had, like Joe is just, Joe just absolutely not only took to me, by the way, like, he took leaps at every single level in this span of a year, of a calendar year, which is wild to me. Daniel Jones is an incredible athlete, and it's taken him about this long to get up to being like a playoff starting QB and to really understand what he's good at. Burrow did it in a year in college, and then he did it again in a year in the pros. And honestly, even in year one, when he was taking his lumps, you saw, you know, bursts of that. You saw like spurts of, oh, that's what he's going to be.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Some dudes' learning curves are just shorter, and some guys, I think, maybe need that knock around that time. Like, to me, the Alabama quarterback experience, where you have these guys who, you know, you get 1 to 2 years, and then you sub in the next guy, it's a testament to, one, having a system, but also, yeah, maybe putting in, you know, a little more developmental work than quarterbacks are currently getting.
Yeah, my favorite thing with Cincinnati, I've talked about this before, they ain't trying to get too complex with this evaluation when it comes to draft picks. They got a quarterback from LSU. They got a wide receiver from LSU. They got two running backs from Oklahoma. They went and took Oklahoma's too deep at running back in the same draft. They got a wide receiver from Clemson. Their left tackle went to Alabama. That small scouting department, all they got is bunny ears. They are getting the players that you can watch on over-the-air television.
He didn't exactly wear his legacy well, especially in his later years. But the Al Davis strategy of drafting dudes with a capital D,
yeah,
you could do worse. You could do much worse than, like you saw Jamar Chase, you're like, that's a rocked up dude. You should probably get him. They just went and got it. Like they, and to be fair, the Bengals did that when they weren't all that either. Like, yeah. I love Vontaze Burfict. Vontaze Burfict was just a big bad dude. I guarantee you in the room, there were probably higher ranked people than somebody in the Bengals was like, I don't know, he's a dude. You should go get him.
You know how bad it must have been with Vontaze Burfict, where even the Bengals didn't draft him.
Yeah.
even they waited for the seventh round to pass to get this very, 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 very good football player. Like, it wasn't like you watched Burfict and were like, oh, I don't know if that guy's got it. No. He absolutely 100% had it in college, and everybody said no. Everybody said no, but the Bengals still were like, oh, no, we know what to do. We know what to do with a guy like that. Why don't you go ahead and come on over here? And I'll just never forget that game where he knocked Antonio Brown out. Pac-Man Jones went apeshit. And Jerry Hill had a fumble. And it was three of those Cincinnati reclamation cases. Right? And they all fell apart at the same time.
Yep. Perfect. Absolutely beautiful.
The whole model got blown. Now, I'm going to keep this how the thing up, which, by the way, I really only came up with while we were sitting here. And I only got one more game to throw out on that one. And it's Dak Prescott. And I haven't talked about this much in person, but you, as someone familiar with the SEC and familiar with Dan Mullen, Dak Prescott was the two-time first-team all-SEC quarterback. How did we not see this coming? Like, even if you don't think that Dak Prescott is a great quarterback, it is clear that he is a quarterback who should have been taken in the first round, right? He has all the stuff. How did it not go that way?
I think there was a little bit of a tinge of system quarterback attached to him because frankly, you know, when you look at profile, and I'm going to throw out a name that people will not recognize for the most part, but that Mississippi State fans will nod at. You come and go, hey, man, you're following in the footsteps of Chris Relf. You're following the footsteps of Tim Tebow, to be honest. When you talk about quarterbacks who were super productive in a kind of spread option run first system that happened to sometimes showcase your arm. And to use passing concepts, which, you know, really weren't sort of NFL-grade, NFL-caliber passing concepts, but that worked really well in college. So I think he had some of the weight of his predecessors in that slot burdening him. I do. And I think also, you know, hey, coming from Mississippi State, it wasn't like, you know, Dak was very good, very, very good in college and was recognizably good. Like he got awards, got, you know, recognition. But at the same time, I think that once you're a three-star prospect and you do really well at a program like Mississippi State, people go, that's probably a three-star prospect, you know, even though he's got, you know, size for days, he's huge. What, he's 6'2", 230, right? 240 now. I think that's probably what weighed people down. They probably thought, you know, that's just another guy who, like, will look for the give on the run first and then throws a decent play action pass and hits his screens. That's really, I think, what they thought.
Or option two, he did get his ass kicked at Panama Beach that one time.
I feel so bad for him. He had a nice new swimsuit. Y'all have a very good time.
On video, got his ass kicked. Like it's all bad. It's probably not his fault. All of these things, and you just not gonna tell me that there's nobody in the front office who didn't say, "Yo, man, you see this video of him getting his ass kicked in Panama Beach?" There was this dude. His name was Kendrick Ellis, and I forget where he went to school. I think he went to Hampton. At the end, he started somewhere in D1. And he had the character knock, right? It was this big, giant defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. And he had the character knock. He had caught some sort of charge where he broke some dude's jaw. And his story was he broke the dude's jaw because the dude approached him with a baseball bat. And I don't know if Kendrick Ellis's story is true, but if his story was true, that someone showed up with a baseball bat and left with a broken jaw, I need to know how Kendrick Ellis was not the number one overall pick in the draft.
He's a system brawler.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, that's a profile right there, brother.
Yeah, when you bring a bat, you lose.
Now, how do you explain that to the homies?
You know what? I can explain Dak. Like, he who has not taken an ass beating somewhere on the Gulf Coast, all right, cast the first stone. I won't, okay? That's where trouble starts. It's where it lives. And if you haven't taken an L of some form while enjoying the fruits of the Fort Walton, Pensacola area, then I can't identify with you, frankly. There's a little part of me that's just never going to recognize you because you got to go through that. To me, if you get your ass kicked on camera, you just got to own it. You just got to be like, that's really too bad. And I'm sorry that y'all can laugh at me. And Jerry wrote me a big check. Would you like to see a video of that, too? Because yeah, I have video of that.
Yeah, like I've never taken a defining ass whooping. It is always funny talking to somebody who has just taken a defining ass whooping. My good buddy from graduate school, D-Nun took his defining ass whooping when he was 8 years old. And he said he got his ass kicked by some dude named Travis, who they call Fat Travis. And I think like 8 or 9 years old or something like that. And keep in mind, me and D-Nun don't wear the same clothes, all right? But he was talking about Fat Travis. And he said something happened. He was bullying Fat Travis. He said he did something to Fat Travis and it turned around like it was nothing. And Fat Travis had enough. He said Fat Travis put that beat on him. He was like, oh, cuz, it got to the point where all I could do was right here, cuz. I had to curl up in the ball, cuz. I had to curl up in the ball. And that was and we were talking something later, and he was just talking about like something that was going on in his life at the time, you know, just things like real stuff. And he was like, yeah, it's this, it was that. Fat Travis incident. He referred to it as the Fat Travis incident because that was a defining ass whooping right there.
Okay, what are you doing messing with somebody called Fat Travis? You know how much anger you're just going to uncork if that man's moniker is Fat Travis? Here's mine. So it was fifth grade. I was going through a lot of things, like being a huge nerd wasn't real easy. And, you know, being like a huge fat nerd, which was worse. This dude named Steve's picking on me. You know what I was going to do? I was going to assert myself. That's right. I was going to throw a punch. You know, the last time I threw a punch was, this is probably third grade. It's been a while. It's a little rusty. Also, your third grade hands, they're not fifth grade hands. There's a significant jump from third grade hands to fifth grade hands. Okay. If I was a video game character, I needed to grind a little bit more before I engaged in this. But you know what? The fight came to me. So I was like, I'm going to punch first because, you know, I'd seen enough Crunch Course on NFL films. I don't know if you remember NFL films. They used to put out, they'd send you a video if you subscribed to SI, Crunch Course. They're like, hey man, you got to punch first. So I was like, I've watched enough of that. I know you got to punch first. So I did. And I hit him clean right across the face. What I was expecting was like, boom, on a wire, Hong Kong Kung Fu right into the wall. That'd be awesome. That did not happen. He just stood there. And I was like, I have bitten off more than I could chew. And then I took three to the face. Three to the face, hard, clean. Like, I think these were like quality, good grown man punches. And we were separated. I didn't go down because I'm too stupid to. I really should have, right? But I didn't. And I remember thinking, I was like, I lucked out. And after the fight, he's like, I won. And you got to look at him and you're like, yeah, you did. Like, clean. Like, absolutely.
Now, see, the thing was, I was, you know, I'm a grade skipper on top of everything. So I was small. Yeah. I was small for my age. Let alone my grade. And when I say I'm a grade skipper, people need to understand this. My birthday is on August 26th. The rollover date in Texas for grades is September 1st. So I'm the youngest person in my supposed to be grade.
And then you jump.
And then you throw me in the other one. All of that is to say, the only people that were trying to bully me were first class punks, right? Because I wasn't messing with nobody and all of that. But what that meant was when I had my Hulk moments, I came out the victor in every single one of them, because they really had never considered the possibility that I was going to swing on them. They really, really had. And I would come out on top. Like, I have to say, winning a fight, there's not a lot of feelings that surpass.
No. And here's what you need to understand. If you're a young nerd and you're listening to this and you got to any point, first of all, I have to advise you ethically to say, best thing you can do is run. Just run. Go ahead. Do it. No shame in survival. Okay. Look at every great wrestler. They run. Okay. All of them. Ric Flair runs, right? Be a coward if you can't. But if you can't and you're a nerd, you're going to need help. So I need you to just grab anything around you. Okay. Got a book? Hit them with it. Okay. Use your environment. All right. You got something hip? Hit them. Just basically, if you can pull it off the wall, do it. Okay. Turn it into a WWE match, because even if you don't win, someone's going to be like, that man threw a painting at me. He's terrifying. And they're never going to do it again.
Yeah, did I ever tell you maybe my favorite swing first story that I've heard from the world of football? So I got a good buddy. He is an economics professor now. But in a previous life, he was a scholarship football player at Ole Miss. And he was a defensive end. And he was going up against Terrence Metcalf. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with Terrence Metcalf was a longtime NFL left tackle. And he had a son who is the size of a left tackle who plays wide receiver named DK. In case you're wondering why DK Metcalf is that big, his dad's a left tackle. Yeah, that Metcalf. And he says something happened, and my guy is good in country. He from the Delta, Mississippi Delta. And he said that he got into it with Terrence Metcalf. And he was like, I ain't going to lie. He got me. And I decided right then and there, I was never getting hit first again. He's like, that was the rule. Like, you can't afford to let a football player hit you first. Even if you're a football player, you got to get that first move advantage on that one, dog.
You've at least got to stun him so you can run under something. That's really... Notice I didn't say run away. It's faster. You got to run under something or seek the authorities. Find something bigger to hide behind.
So I'm going to get one last thing since I got you here. And we got like collegiate things that one collegiate thing to talk about that I haven't had an opportunity to talk about. And how could I not talk about this with you? And somehow you and I have not talked about this yet. But the chain of circumstances involved in Jimbo Fisher turning his offense over to Bobby Petrino. How? And I say this simply because, and you tell, and people think I was tripping on this, but I think you'll 100% agree with me. There's no way in the world that if Texas A&M won a national championship with Bobby Petrino running that offense, there's no way that Jimbo Fisher would even smile. There's no happiness there.
All news is local. All of it. I don't care. And all politics is local. So when that happens, if that happens somehow, which I don't think it will. I don't think it's very likely. I think just too much friction, too much dysfunction there. I can't see it happening. But if it does, he's not going to be happy. You don't want to hire a former head coach, put him in the OC slot, and do that and feel good about it. Because guess what happens next year? Remember me? Jimbo, you're OC. I'm still here, guys. It's fine. No one. Y'all couldn't move the ball last year. You weren't that great moving the ball here before. You know, everyone, including people who used to play for you and fans of your team, say that what you do doesn't really work quite as well as it used to. So, yeah, he's going to be miserable. It's going to be an absolutely miserable situation that only one thing can justify, which is necessity. Necessity. That's the reason that all of you ended up in this boat, right? Like, look at that coaching staff. You have to say, Even if you do not believe in toxic masculinity, I can sell you toxic masculinity. Do you want to know what it is? It is Jimbo Fisher, Bobby Petrino, Steve Adazio, and DJ Durkin in the same lifeboat. That's it.
Adazio's over there too?
Adazio's there too. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got two guys who lost their jobs for being abusive to their players on this staff.
Adazio was at least not well liked. Like there was at least like discontent, and he was not well liked. Also, somewhat humorously, you can watch him get kicked out and ejected from the field in his last game at Colorado State, where just in theory, he just keeps walking, right? Just like he's already super fired. He's kicked out of the game.
Right. He got caught up in that summer of George Floyd where the boys were like, I don't like the way they've been talking to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was one of those guys where there was an investigation. And I want to be clear on this. I do not remember the exact institutional verdict there. I do know that they were bad enough in football that it didn't really matter. That the product itself spoiled any potential revelations there, that they were just like, just leave, just go. Yeah. Like if you didn't believe in it before as a concept, I could show you the four of them in the same rowboat and go, Texas A&M football, man. That's one of the wildest stabs, right? And yeah. I don't say wild in a good way. I'm just saying, behold, happened.
Then DJ Dirk, then he got a dead body on his, right?
That is true. They had a player die in a conditioning exercise at Maryland. And then in the aftermath was revealed that their response was lacking, to say the least, in terms of response to the incident. And the overall environment at Maryland was, I will say, not too distinct from the environment at other schools. But in detail, things like them watching videos of like predators eat, you know, like his motivation, like on top of the actual horror of a player dying and everything, they had this like super hardo culture, right? Which, hey, can I'm going to take a tangent. Do you remember Pete Carroll at USC?
Yes.
Pardon my language. How the f- did that ever happen? Because practices were open, right?
Yep.
Practices were open. They competed hard, but nobody seemed like they were going too insane other than anyone trying to keep pace with Pete Carroll, because none of his assistants could, right? Without the assistance of a whole lot of coffee and prescription ADHD medication, probably, right? Because you can't keep those hours, because that man really only does sleep 3 hours a night, okay? Greatest college football profile ever is J.R. Morringer's profile of Pete Carroll. How on earth does that culture exist now? It just doesn't. It just doesn't, in terms of like a program. Like, what program was simultaneously that productive, competitive, and yet open? Because I guarantee you, man, you try to get in that A&M facility, you're going to have to pull some like serious Jason Bourne shit to get in there.
First of all, I figure USC, they try to keep you out of there just because they don't feel good about the neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? They try to keep the locals out. For people who don't know this, they used to call it the University of South Central. It's over there.
Yeah.
But the other thing with Pete Carroll, he's got to be the only Sigma Alpha Epsilon man to ever take 60 Minutes cameras through Watts, where he could just walk around and be Pete Carroll
and hand out his phone number. Somebody would say, I have a problem. And he would say, I'm Pete Carroll. Here's my number. Let's solve it. Wow. Different human. Right?
That run was so much fun. Like, none of these college programs that are like on rolls right now are actually fun. But like, that USC run was the last real fun one. Florida's was problematic. The USC one was like legitimately fun. Like Miami and Florida State and the first Spurrier run. Those were fun runs. Nebraska. That was a fun run through this whole thing. None of these machines, like Georgia's no fun.
Georgia, all right, how's it? It's no fun for us.
Fair.
I'm sure someone's having fun.
Fair.
Yeah, not me. Like, later on, we might find it. By the way, that's the other thing, too. Like, people go, oh, man, here we go. We got Georgia with the machine. I never assume machine. Never. You get 2 years. Cool. You think everybody else isn't locking screws down? You think everybody else isn't trying to catch up and do what you do? Oh, they can't do what we do. I'm sorry, you were Georgia 4 years ago. Now you're a different Georgia. You can go back to being that same Georgia because everybody else is trying to keep up.
They won back-to-back national championships with Stetson Bennett as the quarterback.
Oh, they're going to win a few more. Yeah. Although, no, I'm a Stetson Bennett respecter. I'm just going to say this. Okay?
Oh, no, I'm a respecter too. But it gets back to kind of what I was talking about with Brock Purdy, though. He had that level of confidence to throw to these wide-open dudes, right? And not everybody could do that. But once his confidence was up, he could be exactly the guy you needed him to be out there playing with those cats.
What if I could throw to George Kittle?
Oh, my God. Right. Or you know, with those both of those mammoth tight ends, like the actual mammoth tight end. And then the white dude that's actually the receiving threat.
Who's got my back? Trent Williams.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what
it's Trent Williams, right?
They've got a Hall of Famer, like a legit Hall of Famer at left tackle. Potential Hall of Famers at running back, tight end, defensive end, linebacker.
Mm-hmm. Brock Purdy.
And then Brock Purdy's out here like, dude, I can do this.
Watch me hit this ball off.
Yeah.
Woo. Watch me hit my outlet. Yeah, like this is, and if you've made it this far in the podcast, we're going to let you in on the greatest secret. We don't know who's going to be good. Nobody does. Nobody does. I thought Josh Allen was garbage. I thought he was going to be terrible. I was completely wrong, and so was everyone else.
I just want to remind you, though, he was terrible for 2 years. Like, people need to understand we were right, and then suddenly we weren't.
And then we were wrong! And I will tell you this, too. I thought every single time Stetson Bennett made a great throw, every time he made a great throw, I was like, he's better than I thought he was. And every time he missed the throw, I was like, I was right. He's trash. It's garbage.
Look, last year I had it. I was like, you can't go all the way through a season without Stetson Bennett causing you problems once. And then that game happened. But then you know what happened after that? They got to play two more.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they got to play two more. And by the way, he made a couple of throws in those games that are unearthly. Made beautiful throws and reads in those games. And I'm not talking about the wide open ones in Ohio State. He made a couple of throws down the stretch that were money throws on the dot. And every single time I was like, yeah, I guess he's better than I think he's going to
be.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, and I'm prepared for this too. People are like, well, you think he can be successful as a pro? My answer is, why not? I've been wrong about everybody.
Hey,
I've been wrong about everybody. Why can't I be wrong about him?
Yeah, I'd rather have Anthony Richardson take. Didn't really stick up as well as I would have.
But dude, no, we could be right. Like, no. Flip it the other way.
Yeah.
Flip it the other way.
That's Josh Allen right there. Like, if there is a call for Anthony Richardson, it is Josh Allen. Except I'm not betting on that ever happening again. But I would feel awfully vindicated if it did.
Again, everything comes down to a roulette table for me. Somebody hit on Josh Allen. Somebody put their money on 00, and it hit.
Josh Allen is so rare that nobody's even like, yo, we got to go find another one of those. They're like, nah, baby, they don't make those. Because the other one of those is Anthony Richardson. Like, get ready. He either is going in the third round or he's going number five. But somebody's going to be able to talk themselves into that one. And you know what he's going to say when he comes in there? I mean, look at Dak Prescott. I mean, like, playing for Dan Mullen, man, that thing don't really give you a chance to, like, properly show what you can provide.
Oh, Anthony Richardson was a 4-star. Come on. Dak was only a 3-star.
That is true.
Yeah. Come on. There's potential here. There's a little light at the end of that tunnel, and we're not sure if it's the oncoming train or not.
I'm just going to wrap this podcast by saying I received a tweet from somebody that said, Tony, no. And then it was a tweet for Tony Dungy. And by the time you hear this, you probably would have said it, but you need to look it up. But oh, man, it is one of those. Oh, wow.
Wow. Hold on. I'm going to look it up right on the air with you. That's what we're going to do.
I'm going to send it to you right now. I don't want to deprive the joy from other people when it comes to this, but I'm going to send this to you right now. And you're going to see this and you're going to understand why the response was, Tony, no.
Got okay. It. Okay. Ready? So do you want me to react specifically or generally? Want me to make a noise or
a noise
fly information?
A noise will do.
You know, respecting your elders is overrated. I include myself in that statement, but yeah.
That's all I'm saying. That is not Dominique Foxworth. It is Spencer Hall. Check him out at Channel 6. Check him out on the SEC Network, though I guess not for a little while, but check him out there nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll be doing some F1 stuff on ESPN Online, though. I'll let y'all know about that.
Hey, man. I appreciate you saving the day, man. Thank you.
My pleasure.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Remember, hit the voicemail line, 860-516-4119. Tell us about that time you saw somebody quit their job in the middle of their shift. Also, check out Game Theory Friday night, 11 p.m. Eastern on HBO. And I want to just take a brief moment because I really do try not to talk too much about it here because some don't feel right about that. But we're leveling up, man. Like, we really did a lot of things. We put in a lot of work to take what we did last season and figure out, honestly, how to make it more like this podcast. Like, every day we're trying to figure out how to make that show have the feel and the energy of this podcast. And we took some big steps toward getting there. So if this is a podcast that you like, and by the way, from the numbers, it is. If it is the kind of podcast you like, you're going to like this television show. So check us out, streaming on HBO Max, also on HBO, 11 o'clock Eastern, right after Real Time with Bill Maher. Adi Khan and Parker always handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.